Well, good morning or good afternoon, everybody, depending where you are, what continent, what time zone. I'm Lawson Vader with Donors Trust, and welcome to another conversation with some of the institutional recipients of our ongoing Growth and Resilience Project. Just as a reminder, this project was established with funds from our Whitney Ball Memorial Fund and contributions from generous donors, both inside and outside the Donors Trust client network. To date, we have granted roughly $700,000 to 17 organizations, several of which we are featuring today. We've had a significant response from this project. We still have dozens and dozens of proposals that are quite worthy that we were hoping to consider based on the availability of funds and outside sources. The purpose of this project, just to remind everybody, is to focus on policy as a fundamental part of any recovery from these current challenges. We see that response as important and equally, frankly, humanitarian as the responses that we see from large foundations and companies when it comes to things like worker relief funds, elder care, food and medical supply banks, and these sorts of things. We're featuring today five representatives from five organizations, the Franklin News Foundation with Chris Krug, Lithuania Free Market Institute with Vanessa Vane, the Pioneer Institute in Boston with Jim Sturgis, Job Creators Network, Elaine Parker, and the Georgia Center for Opportunity with Randy Hicks. This is a diverse group by design. It represents diverse but very important approaches to addressing regulatory, government overreach, barriers of entry, healthcare, and so forth. Each of them will speak for 3 minutes about his or her respective project, and then we'll entertain questions from those of you on the call. Just a reminder, if you're using Zoom, please use the Q&A feature at the bottom of the screen. We also are recording this. It will make it available to anybody who's interested after the fact. So with that, I'm going to get out of the way. I'm going to turn this over to Chris, and they'll just run down all five, and then I'll return to pose some questions at the end. So Chris, I'll turn this over to you.
Thank you very much, Lawson. I appreciate it. Good day, everyone, and thank you for having me here. I am Chris Krug, president of the Franklin News Foundation, publishers of the Center Square Newswire Service and thecentersquare.com. On behalf of everyone at Franklin and the Center Square, thank you to Donors Trust and the Donors Trust philanthropic community for your generous support of our mission, especially at this critical time. Your generosity allows us to continue pacing toward our goal of covering all 50 state houses and federal government in Washington, D.C. Local legacy media, as you know, is in rough shape and unable to manage coverage of COVID-19 on its own. It's tough but fair straight news reporting from the Center Square, which has appeared in newspapers and online sites across the country, that is pushing back on government from government's perspective during this confusing time. Please allow me to tell you a bit more about us and our mission. Franklin News Foundation's The Center Square is the fastest growing newswire service in the country. We publish more than 50 original straight news stories a day from across the United States, agenda setting from the state houses, across individual states and with state-focused national news that is then distributed in real time to newspapers, radio stations, and television in local markets. Great journalism that nobody reads isn't really all that great. Content is king, but distribution's power. Coincidentally, today is the first anniversary of the Center Square. In the past year, our work has been republished by more than 500 outlets across the United States. In the month of April, our work reached more than 1 million subscribers through their local newspapers each day. This is an audience in aggregate that is outpaced only by the USA Today. The Center Square doesn't throw bombs because facts sting harder. The Center Square is composed of experienced professional and career journalists fanned out across the United States who apply the framers' intention to the reporting of daily news for the state house across states and nationally. The Center Square's tonality is distinct in its reasonableness, but never hyperbolic. The construct of our stories is straightforward and compact. The editorial consistency in our approach is the epitome of constant pressure aimed directly at that audience in the center. Our work product is high quality daily news stories with a taxpayer sensibility that are published immediately by willing daily news providers in print and online, and certainly read across radio and television around the United States. I'd like to close with our ambitious growth plan. The Center Square, as I just mentioned, was born in May 2019, and in less than a year has grown from 12 states to 25 today. Because of our business model and expertise in media, the Center Square can continue to scale quickly. Our small but growing team of editors, reporters, correspondents, and freelancers, each very carefully selected and well-coached to see the opportunities that exist in each state where we have focus, is biting into mainstream media consumption. And let's look at that this way. Every story from the center square that appears in a local news outlet nudges out something from the Associated Press or the New York Times syndicate or the Washington Post syndicate or Reuters, something would have brought a distinctly progressive perspective to that news. We are grateful for your support and hope that each of you comes along with us on our journey to restore balance and fairness to state level and national news. Thank you again, Donors Trust, for your support and belief in our mission.
Hello, I am Anna Taveniev from the Lithuanian Free Market Institute. At the outset of the pandemic, people in Lithuania faced a severe shortage of sanitizers. And guess why? Because it would take 120 days to get government permission for the production of sanitizers. But it did not take long for bureaucrats to figure that they could actually give out permits just within 2 days. Which, of course, solved the problem. And as fear and panic were spreading among sick people in Lithuania, the government also realized in no time that remote renewal of prescription medications could actually happen remotely, and it made perfect sense. So it became crystal clear that these and many other flawed regulations, which had prevented flexible private sector responses to the healthcare needs, production standstills, and business shutdowns were never needed. So now is our chance to see to it that such regulations go for good. And 22 years ago, our think tank was the main driving force behind Lithuania's massive post-independence deregulation program. Over the past 10 years, our international award-winning Municipal Performance Index has driven multiple local governance reforms in favor of free enterprise and consumer choice. Just a few years ago, we played a major role in raising Lithuania's doing business ranking from the 21st to the 11th position. And today, we're going to realize another ambitious deregulation program. As Winston Churchill famously said, never let a good crisis go to waste. So we will build hashtag never needed regulation register, and we will draw on this register to launch a deregulation campaign with a series of hands-on deregulation packages. We will advocate that temporary deregulation policies like the ones I mentioned should become permanent and should scale down across other areas of regulation. And second, we will advocate that emergency infringements on our liberties should end with the passing of the crisis. But this is just one part of our strategy. Our hashtag Never Needed Regulation campaign will help us build the case and propose a plan for a systemic revision of regulatory policy. Rather than endlessly handpicking regulations one by one, we will argue that the time and budget pressure evokes the deregulation imperative within the government. And we will take a novel approach to support our case for deregulation. We realize that the economic rationale rarely appeals to politicians, bureaucrats, and even to intellectuals. So we will utilize our novel multidisciplinary paradigm to champion the intrinsic human capacity to respond to scarcity in all its shapes and forms, and that this capacity actually outweighs government intervention. We are very grateful for this opportunity, and we are looking forward to embark on this ambitious project. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Jim Sturgis. I run Pioneer Institute, which is a Boston-based think tank that works around the country on education, charter schools, school choice. We also work regionally on issues of health, healthcare, and life sciences. We also work in the area of civil liberties and government transparency, and finally, economics. I just want to start by saying again, thank you very much to Donors Trust, to all of you for your support, for your trust in us. This is a big challenge for us in Massachusetts and New England, as it is for the rest of the country and the rest of the world. We've been hit especially hard. Our contagion rates are high, and our unemployment rates are at least around 25% currently. We've taken a broad-based approach as an organization. All of our work in education, all of our work in healthcare, all of our work in the life sciences, all of our work in economics, it's all focused on COVID right now. The proposal that was accepted, we're deeply grateful for that, was for a project that focuses on the hardest hit industries in our state and around the country. We've decided to take a super granular approach to this problem with what we think is resonance that can occur around the country. What I mean is that by that is the following. We're looking only at restaurants, retailers, the travel industry, hotels, and travel, because they actually account for over one half of the job loss in Massachusetts. That's largely true around the country. In areas of Massachusetts, it accounts for 75% of the job losses, and they are massive. We've decided to take a look at, again, three specific industries, and we've decided to take a look at fine-grained, small-bore issues that are regulatory in nature or tax-oriented in order to make progress both short-term to make sure they can stay afloat and keep people employed or get people back to employment, and longer-term to use the opportunity of this crisis to glue into place a more free market approach to, and I'm just going to give you the example of restaurants in the interest of time. Look, Pioneer, like every other state-level think tank, has pushed like crazy to make sure we'd have by-right permitting for food delivery, for curbside pickup, for even the sales of alcohol, changes in licensing. We want now to move to things like virtual inspections. We want to, as restaurants reopen, they're going to actually have to reconfigure themselves. We don't want to see them have to go through a whole bunch of local and state regulations on that. There's a lot around recovery. That we can do. There's the business deductibility of meals taxes. There's the suspension of payroll taxes for hourly wage earners. There's also the elimination of meals taxes. Again, that applies to all of these industries we're talking about. If we're talking about hotels, we're talking about room taxes and that sort of thing. Our approach on this is to, again, take a fine-grained approach, go at it one by one, working together with the trade associations closely, who in this case are truly aiming to keep the markets opened. We'll be working across platforms, yes, research, but also videos of employees, videos of employers. We'll also do a lot of podcasting on this. These are challenges that exist here in Massachusetts and across New England, but they are also realities on the ground across the country. There is an opportunity of take up around the country. And I just like to close by saying again, thank you very much for the opportunity. It matters not just to us as a think tank. It matters to literally hundreds of thousands, and frankly, in Massachusetts right now, over a million unemployed people since the start of COVID.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Elaine Parker. I am the president of the Job Creators Network Foundation. I want to first start out by thanking Donors Trust for your support in our campaign. The Job Creators Network Foundation represents small business interests all over the country, and we work to defend free markets and encourage entrepreneurship. We are venturing out on a challenge to get America back to work and help reopen society. We're doing that through the voices of doctors and small business owners, and we're doing that through a program called our Advocate Program. We've successfully run advocate programs, which involves writing and placing op-eds and placing physicians and small business owners in the media through op-eds, letters to the editor, radio hits, as well as TV hits. We've done it in the past with our small business owners to advocate for tax cuts. And we're incorporating physicians into that voice now as well in reopening society. And the way we were doing that is in early 2020, we had been building a network of free market doctors to actually message on healthcare reform. And once we've been in the grips of this pandemic with COVID and society has basically been shut down and the economy is just really been hurt and decimated, especially small business on the front lines. We realized that we need to go back. We went back to those doctors and asked them if they would help us reopen society and reassure Americans that we can safely reopen society and encourage Americans that it is okay to venture out, but they need to be given permission by someone credible. And we found that through actually recent research by Edelman, that the trust barometer for doctors is the most credible messengers. And so we want to back that up on the with small business owners talking about the need to open society, but first led by doctors as a messenger on the pandemic. And along with that media outreach, we'll be filming doctors and small business owners and promoting their stories through these op-eds and getting them out on social media and really magnifying that message on social media. This is a 90-day campaign, and we want to reassure Americans that it is okay, that we open a society, that we need to reopen society and get our economy back to normal and get our lives back to normal. Again, I want to thank Donors Trust for your support in helping to reopen society and get America back to work.
Good afternoon, everybody. It's a pleasure to be with you. This is an honor to be able to talk a bit about our work and what's going on. So our work at GCO is focused on making our principles come alive for low-income earners, for the poor, for the disadvantaged. And we're reducing dependency basically through a couple of ways. First, by changing bad public policies, but also by promoting good public policies. The thing that makes us somewhat unique is that we also work at the community level. We're tapping into the power of the private sector to create opportunities and local solutions to what are local problems that are best solved locally. Now, prior to COVID-19, we were working on all sorts of workforce-related issues on the policy side and on the community side. On the policy side, we were working on creating a framework for welfare reform at the state level, in partnership with the federal administration, that will eliminate some of the traps in the system, the things that keep people from securing gainful employment and moving forward and progressing in their lives. We're continuing to do that, though it's been stalled a lot by both governments at the federal and local level being preoccupied, understandably, with COVID-19. But at the community level, our work is really heated up. We've been approached by leaders in Georgia's second highest populated county, Gwinnett, to help them solve the unemployment problem that has been created by the shutdown. Right now, we're talking about people, and before the COVID crisis started, we were really focused on the chronically un and underemployed. The profile of people we're helping now are people who are accustomed to working and are out of work simply because of this crisis. So we started working within the county seat of Gwinnett, a city called Lawrenceville, working with nonprofit leaders and business leaders to provide resources for rapidly reattaching recently unemployed people to work. And at this point, we have about 150 people who have entered the program. We're working directly with 40 to actively kind of get them through and into work. We've now been asked to expand that program from the county seat to the entire county. Three things worth noting about this effort. First, when working at the community level, we're working with people all across the political spectrum, people who vote different ways, have different views. But the reality is no one talks politics. Everybody recognizes the importance of work. We don't hear people talking about Governor Kemp or President Trump. We simply hear people who are interested in getting people into the workforce, which I think is indicative of some a positive mindset among people in the state of Georgia. Second, I would say this, though some might not recognize it, government is always limited in how effectively they can transform lives. We know that, but with tax receipts way down, it seems that people are more aware that government can't do it. And so this affords us an opportunity to illustrate how communities solve problems working together. And then third, the other thing I'd say is this problem isn't going away. You know, we started this community-based workforce initiative and even our policy work with unemployment at 3.1%. But here we are now, it's much higher than that. It's not going to be getting back down to 3.5% anytime soon. It's probably not going to get down into single digits anytime soon. So this solution is about helping communities create durable infrastructures for the long haul, infrastructures that aren't dependent upon government. So thank you for the opportunity to share a little bit about our work at GCO.
Thanks, Randy. I do have actually we've got some time left, and I want to give at least each of you one question. Let me just sort of start in order that you spoke, just for lack of something else. Chris, obviously it's critical to be building an additional infrastructure when it comes to information because so many people are starved for it right now. And I love how you've taken advantage of the situation in a good way of sort of the COVID, everybody's panic-stricken about what to hear and listen to, right. And you're providing content. So the question is, how do you shift from ongoing stories related to COVID to all the other important issues on free enterprise and things that matter to us that may or may not be health or safety related? Do you see this as a blip or really the beginning of something more significant?
I think that's a terrific question. And I think for context, we certainly didn't start out, covering COVID-19. We've just been able to find, a tenor and a tonality and a consistency with the way that we report that's allowed our work to ramp up, exponentially. But even in February and January this year, we had two of our best statistical months. So we have grown, the way that a good business grows over time, built relationships, built trust. You have to imagine sort of the process by which we're doing what we're doing. So we don't have editorial control at the local level of the newspapers that choose to run us. We have to put great work in front of them and have them select us. And what we've seen in the calendar year is just exponential growth, where January was a terrific month. We had well over 2,000 placements across, 45 states. And that has scaled through our April statistics, our metrics there, where we nearly reached 15,000 placements across the United States in the month of April. And not every single story are we creating, lives in that COVID space. It's just sort of at this point in time, it's a lot of what people are talking about. It's on the minds of a lot of different people.
Sure. Well, that makes sense. Annetta, let's head over to your part of the world. So one of the things that I've always been impressed with LFMI, for those who don't know it, is how effective an organization you've been really since the beginning. And I think that you've had some great successes in the past. And so one of the questions is, how starved, if you are, is the government for information from you? Because we all have big dreams and hopes and things, but it's also about convincing people. And so one of the importance for you to talk about is just briefly is your relationship with sort of the authorities in a way that they actually are and will rely on you for viable alternatives and suggestions and will act upon that.
Yeah, we have a track record of working with all administrations in Lithuania, and the accomplishments and successes we have seen during our 30 years in operation. We've seen them throughout different administrations. So this gives us, an integrity and credibility that we are able to work with any government. And in this particular case, we've been one of the major voices in this COVID-19 policy debate since the outset of the crisis. Actually, very early on, the government acted on one of our first appeals to defer taxes upfront before businesses ran into problems, which they did literally over a weekend, just one day before the taxes were due, actually. Mm-hmm. And then later on, the parliament acted on our proposal to thoroughly revise the parliamentary spring agenda and to discard any policies, any plans, legislative plans that it would that were not related with the crisis and would actually even bring more regulations, more obstacles in handling the crisis. And very early on, our president spoke before the Parliamentary Budget and Finance Committee, and she called for budget cuts aligned with deregulation. And she got some traction, and this proposal got some traction, and the chair actually said, okay, but can you give us a list of regulations that can go? So they realized there is this pressure now to revise the budget, and that should come with deregulation. So we are very hopeful that there'll be demand for good policies, and they will have to act on some good regulation policies. Right. So this has helped that we'll be able to take things forward.
Right. Jim, you know, none of us are really operating in a vacuum, and a lot of us care a great deal. Everybody cares about the retail industry, the restaurant industry. I mean, that's clearly has been decimated. But it's also a question of how you position yourself to work with folks. So sort of what kind of relationship do you have with some of the trade associations, both locally and even nationally? Because they're going to be a big part of this too. And they may not be normally a natural ally, but I think that's what kind of opportunity do you have there?
Yeah, no, it's a great question, Lauren Wilson. It's, you know, they're sometimes allies and sometimes they're not allies, right? So we've worked profitably with the Retailers Association many, many times. We've worked profitably with some of the travel folks many times. We also have butted heads with them. This is one that's actually going to take, we have good and abiding relationships with them, but we are starting this in a way that says two things. One, time is of the essence. And the second thing is build relationships, not just the top of these organizations, but burrow in deeply. And what I mean by that is the following. After receiving this grant, we already have surveys that we had prepared in advance in the hope that we would get the support. And thank you again. We have surveys already out to literally 4,000 organizations that are part of the Retailers Association. Again, I'll just focus on that as an example, where we're using it not just to ask for their input on the policy proposals they're putting forward, but also to see who raises his or her hand and says, I'm really interested in this, because this is not just about data. This is not just about having a good story to tell. This is the right storyteller who takes it to the legislature. We have an agreement with them also that they will be doing lobby on behalf of what we come up with. We're in full agreement. Whatever comes out of this, they're happy with. I'd say one last thing. This is an opportunity not just to work with trade organizations that are local, state, or even regional. The National Federation of Retailers is very interested in this this work as well, and we hope to take what we have in Massachusetts and take it out there. Frankly, work with a number of our partners in the SPN network.
Got it. So Elaine, here's the question that every fundraiser wants, and one that I should be asking everybody, but okay, with more money, what would you do?
Well, with more money, I would put more muscle into this. And we would, so a lot of this is earned media through the op-eds and placing our folks on the physicians and the small business owners on TV and radio. But then a lot of it is social promotion. So we would take all of that earned media and put more muscle into the social promotion side of it so that more eyeballs can see it. This can be very geographically focused. There are certain parts of the country that are very ready to hear this message. There are some parts of the country that are not quite ready. And for those parts, we'll start there as the rollout and focus that message. And we want to start in the local markets at the local level and expand out from there. And social media and a greater dollar, increased dollars will help us increase that reach. And we can also extend the life of the campaign. It's currently a 90-day campaign. I think we probably could make a large justification for extending the campaign to 6 months, if not longer.
Yeah. So Randy, last question to you. In many ways, what you're doing is really in the long term. I mean, the larger question of welfare reform, you get people back to work is important now as it will be as it would have been had we even had this crisis. In many ways, COVID is providing probably a quick incentive from a marketing standpoint, but the reality is it's not really changing what the long-term plan is. It's just a new opportunity that maybe has some different skill set challenges. And so is it really just a short-term gain, but it's a long-term opportunity, or are you having to pivot completely because of this?
No, great question, Lawson. We're not having to pivot. We're doing what we were kind of set up to do and what we've been working on for a long time. The pivot that was involved, and it was a minor pivot, was focusing our energies and throwing more resources at a problem that suddenly more people were aware of. Look, and with 3.1, 3.5% unemployment, people tend to keep unemployment, you know, kind of out of their line of vision, and they're not too worried about it. When suddenly you're talking about double digit depression era unemployment numbers, suddenly you have some really deep concern. So in the situation here, the people who have largely gone unemployed over the past few weeks are low-income earners, which means they're also the ones who are much more likely to fall into long-term poverty. So what this has afforded us an opportunity and a responsibility to do is to speed up the delivery of the program, right? And to spread the news as quickly as possible and create a replicable project for other communities.
Got it. Well, thanks. Well, thank you again for all of you for being on the call and for what you're doing. I've said before, and I'm going to keep saying it, it's important to remember that not all groups that we'd like to support are being supported from this project. But what we're really trying to do is support the movement worldwide, not just local. And so the projects that we feature today and projects that we feature previously and ones that we hope to continue to feature are really the ones that are all connected. So what we're trying to do with this Growth and Resilience Project is by helping one, we really help everybody. And the scalability of one, what Lithuania can achieve, can also be utilized in other places. And same is true of Pioneer and everybody else. And so the more that you can partner with us, you know, by contributing directly to this project and or to the organizations that we are hosting and highlighting here, is obviously not just appreciated, but necessary. And then very lastly, something that I want to say that's going to be important for the committee to be focusing on in the short term is how to address increasing concerns over civil liberties, constitutional protections, opportunities to use litigation at the national and local level when it comes to executive orders, local ordinances, try to find that balance between sort of desire for safety, but the necessity of free exchange and personal responsibility, which is very much part of our economic vitality. And so we intend for this to be a robust effort, and we'll use the Growth and Resilience Project to push some of these ideas forward. We will continue to keep you up to date. If anybody is interested, we have the full list of proposals with the summaries available. We are continuing to work with other foundations and get these proposals to them because, you know, we want to try to prime the pump and make it possible for them to do a lot more than with what we are giving them. So to everybody who was on the call today, thank you. I appreciate your support for these projects, for what we're trying to do. I hope the rest of the day goes well wherever you are. And with that, stay safe, stay busy, and stay free. Thank you.